Hello, it is the top of the hour, and I want to welcome you to another lesson in the Lead Yourself First program. I'm Tom Cooper. I'm really glad you've joined me for this lesson. Today, we're talking about curiosity. Lead Yourself First is your personal growth program. Dorothy Parker said, "The cure for boredom is curiosity. There is no cure for curiosity." Is curiosity important to your career and your personal growth? That's what today's lesson is all about. This program, Lead Yourself First, is your system to help you develop the kinds of skills that you need to be successful today and every day. Over the last 20 years, I've been learning and researching what makes some people great at influencing other people, and this program is designed to bring you the best that I've been able to find, the best information and ideas and skills and tools. They're going to help you today and every day. And these tools in your toolkit will help you build the things you need to build. I was about 30 years old when I began to study these things in seriousness, and it took me several years before I began to really hit my stride as a leader. I can't help but think that I could have learned more if I'd only started sooner. And now is your time to start and to learn most importantly, to apply what we're studying together. And that's where we jump into what I talk about every single lesson. And the reason I talk about this every single lesson is it's critically important. The question is, how will you act? How will you act after this lesson is over? What are you going to do differently? ACT is an acronym. Stands for apply, change, and teach. So, what's something you can apply? What's something you can change in the way you're doing things? And teach, not like on a call like this, but maybe it's an idea that you're going to share with a coworker or with your spouse or with your boss. How are you going to be different at the end of this? So as we're going through, this lesson is rich with a lot of ideas, and I want to encourage you, grab a piece of paper and something to write with, because you're going to need to take some notes. And as we're going through, write down A, C, or T next to those things that you think will help you the most. Now, I've been looking forward to today's lesson, and I look forward to this one in particular because I've seen people pretty much die from boredom at work. Years ago, I worked with a man who had been working for years to attain a level, and he finally made it to the position of director in a large company, and then he just stopped working. He just stopped. He used to sit in his big office at work, and he'd read the newspaper. His boss would try to assign work to him, and he never did any of the work that was assigned to him. That guy was bored. Somewhere along the line, he had lost his curiosity, and ultimately, it led to a long season of struggle for him, and I'll tell you some more about him later in this lesson. But in the next few minutes, we're going to unpack some ideas that you can put into practice right away about how curiosity is linked to your success at work. And maybe you're feeling stuck or frustrated or bored. Maybe you feel like you're just not able to move ahead. This lesson, it's for you. And you'll leave this lesson with some specific things you can do. Now, maybe as you listen to this lesson, there'll be something that you want to do to go deeper into this topic. And if that's you, I promise at the end of the lesson, I'll share with you a way to do that. Fair enough? Okay, let's dive in. Have you ever heard the idea that there's a difference between having 10 years experience doing something and having 1 year experience repeated 9 times? I think that's true. It's like that director who stopped working. He was passing time, but he was not growing. He wasn't having new experiences. And because he stopped delivering value, and I'll grant you that his case is an extreme one, he wasn't involved in any important discussions. He wasn't asking questions. He wasn't trying to improve. We worked in the technology world. He managed to hide at work for about 5 years before they fired him. It was a big company. They really didn't like to fire people. And that guy and I reported to the same boss. Now, I was bothered by the fact that he was so difficult and the fact that the guy was higher pay grade than I was and he didn't do anything. And I asked my boss about it. My boss said, "I can either invest a ton of energy in finding a way to get that guy to do something, get him off my team completely, or I can invest in my people the ones on my team who actually produce, and I pick you over him. Now, looking back, I think my boss could have done both, but I also think he got worn down by the bureaucracy and the slow pace and a culture that just accepted bad performance and just decided he couldn't change things. And having worked in that organization for a long time, I can understand how he made that decision. But it wasn't just the team that was hurting as a result of this guy not performing. And it wasn't just the company. I think the biggest loser in this deal was him. He had stopped building relationships. He stopped doing projects that mattered to the business. He stopped learning new things. And the company let it go on so long that I think he completely forgot how to do those things. He was stuck. And even though it was 5 years of him not doing any work at all before they finally let him go, when they did let him go, he was angry. I don't think he understood that the world had passed him by while he was coasting. He thought he was getting away with something. He wasn't getting away with anything. And I watched him from afar after he left. He was unemployed for about 2 years. I think he'd forgotten how to work, and he'd let his skills deteriorate so much that he had very little to offer to the marketplace when he really needed the marketplace to be interested in what he had to do. And I'll grant you, this is an extreme example, but it's a relevant one because I think at his core, he had lost his curiosity. He'd lost his openness and his wonder about technology, about people, and about business problems. And fundamentally, it's that curiosity that helps us make a key difference in the world. Albert Einstein said, "I have no special talents. I am only passionately curious." This is the guy who changed our understanding of physics. He said he has no special talents. And then there's management guru Peter Drucker. He said, "My greatest strength as a consultant is to be ignorant and ask a few questions." Here are two examples of people who made a huge impact on the world, and they didn't say, "I know it all." Instead, they said, "Let me ask some questions." Curiosity sets us apart. It helps us consider new ideas, new ways of thinking. Curiosity is what caused the first person to ask, "What if I put hot sauce on that?" Curiosity is what caused the first person to ask, "Now, why is it that that substance explodes? And could we harness that explosion to do something positive?" I was explaining to one of my kids the other day that there are explosions happening in the engine of a car. That's a really powerful way to capture that energy and use it for something productive. Our curiosity allows us to make progress, to shake things up, to make positive changes in the world. And that said, I think we need to get one thing straight. It's not that Einstein or Drucker said, "I don't need to grow." They didn't remain ignorant to the extent that they were ignorant. Each of them persisted and used their curiosity to grow their knowledge. Being ignorant can be helpful if you're looking to bring a new perspective to a situation. Pardon me, I'm fighting through a cold during today's lesson. Sorry about that. Sometimes curious people get shut down by the people around them. Sometimes it's bad to get shut down. Sometimes it's not so bad. I'll give you an example. I had several times in my career where I hired a relatively inexperienced person to work on my team. One guy was Ramit. He was a young guy. He was ambitious, and he had an infective curiosity. Why do we do it this way? Why did it take so long? Why do we need to involve so many people? Wasn't there a better way? And all those questions are good questions, and they need to be included in context. If you're new to the organization, or if you're new to the line of business, or the set of skills, or the processes you need to execute, that's not the time to be offering lots of insights and suggestions for improvement. It's not that you can't bring great things to the team. It's just that you haven't proven yourself yet. I told Ramit what I've told many young people over the course of my career. Master our broken processes first, then offer suggestions for improvements. He didn't like that very much. Now, was I just being ageist or closed-minded or foolish to not listen to someone who had some great ideas? I mean, what if he had a brilliant idea that could have really helped and I just rejected it out of hand? I want to bring up an idea here that might help give some context to what I'm talking about here. G.K. Chesterton essentially said, "We shouldn't tear down a fence until we understood why it was built in the first place." Before we recommend changing a process, we ought to first understand what the process requires of us, and we must do that well. Why? Because someone has thought about the problem, and someone has come up with a set of steps that work to solve a business problem. That someone probably understood the business problem better than the person who was just starting out. Let me give you an example. Let's say that you are assigned the job of creating a new car, brand new car, completely from nothing. And you don't have a lot of automotive experience. As you begin, you learn that the cost of a car is significantly increased by the cost of airbags, collision avoidance technology, rear view cameras, and crumple zones. Dramatically increased. That these things can add weight, and weight reduces fuel economy. You know that fuel economy is important, and that lowering the cost to manufacture the car means a lower purchase price, and a lower purchase price makes the car more attractive to buyers. So you might look at those factors, and you might suggest that you just stop adding those things in. After all, you might have even driven a car for a few years and never had an accident. Or you might have driven a car for a few years and not even seen an accident. But all of those things have been added to cars to address needs that might not be obvious to the person who first encounters the problem of, can you design a car for me? So before you tear down a fence, redesign a process, or chuck out those things that just don't matter, it's probably wise to be curious about the processes that already exist and about how you can become more efficient at adapting yourself to those processes. Now, it might be that those processes are outdated. They might be weak and poor, and they might not be delivering the value they need to deliver. But once you've mastered the defined process, then your suggestions about improvements are much more likely to be welcomed. So let's say you're already mastering the steps of the process today. Let's say you're trusted to follow them and to get things done. What if you've done that for so long that you've lost your curiosity, like the man I used to work with? Well, I'm going to turn a corner here, and I want to share with you some ways that you can get your curiosity groove back. These come from John Maxwell's book, The 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth. Number one. Do you believe that you can become curious or more curious? We know our brains are astonishing. There's this thing in the way our brains work, it's called neuroplasticity, and it has to do with our ability as people to reprogram our brains. It doesn't matter how long you've been doing it a certain way, it doesn't matter how old you are. All of us can learn new things. Now, the longer we've been doing a thing a certain way, the harder it is for us to change our habits, but it is possible. One person who really inspires me is my uncle. My uncle had a career as a civil engineer, and after he worked through that career, he retired to be able to enjoy teaching people to fly airplanes. He worked part-time in his retirement for many years, flying regularly, and he loved every single minute of it. But one fateful day, he began to experience severe pain in his left arm. And eventually he went to the hospital, and doctors began to investigate, and they discovered that he was suffering from a disease that was rapidly killing his arm. And if they didn't solve that, it would likely take his life. It was touch and go. He was rushed into the operating room, and by the time he was prepped for surgery, and the doctors saw how bad it was, they had to remove his left arm at the shoulder to save his life. Now here's a left-handed guy who is retirement age, and now he has no left arm. He can't fly unless he passes an FAA flight physical, and he would have to demonstrate his ability to fly a plane with his remaining non-dominant hand. Now my Uncle David is one of the most determined, you might say stubborn, people I've ever met. And he became curious about whether it was possible for him to do that. Could he overcome these significant difficulties to return to his passion for teaching and flying? Michael David leveraged neuroplasticity to develop new pathways, new ways of thinking to allow him to overcome the challenges he was facing. And today, he is certified by the FAA to fly with his prosthetic arm. He's learned new ways to do everything from buttoning his shirt to driving and even flying airplanes. Can you learn to be curious? Even if there are severe impediments in front of you, I think you can. So that was number one of 10. Number two, have a beginner's mindset. That's exactly what Peter Drucker was talking about when he said he was ignorant and he asked questions. It's like the little girl who made her mom crazy by asking question after question after question. Finally, her mother was exasperated and said, "Stop asking! Curiosity killed the cat." After a few quiet minutes of thinking, the little girl asked, "Well, what did the cat want to know?" The fact is, if you're looking for innovation, experts cannot bring innovation. They already know 1,000 things that don't work, 1,000 reasons things need to be the way they are. But approaching with a beginner's mindset allows you to question the things that everybody knows. Number 3, make why your favorite word. Legendary interviewer Larry King said, "I never learn anything when I'm talking. I ask short, simple questions like who, what, where, when. I find they work very well. They allow the other person to speak because they're short. And they make it easy for the other person to answer because they're straightforward." People with a victim's mindset say, "Why me?" not because they want to know, but because they want to feel sorry for themselves. Now, John Maxwell wrote a book called Good Leaders Ask Great Questions. Invest in your seeking. Ask why as often as you can. Number 4, spend time with curious people. It's been said you become the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. You become the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. Who is in your inner circle? Who is the most creative person you know? Do you spend time with them? What can you learn from spending time with that person? Number 5, learn something new every day. Don't just endure your day, same stuff, different day. Oh, it's hump day. Can't wait till Friday. Thank God it's Friday. Right? Don't just endure your day. Look for the things that are part of the adventure. Who can you meet? What can you learn from the people you meet? What can you discover, inspect, or improve about the way you do your work? John says we should decide to intentionally learn something every day. Keep our eyes and ears open as we go through the day, and probably most importantly, reflect on our days so that we can let the things that we learned bubble up to the top of our awareness. I've talked about reflection many times before, and I keep mentioning it because reflection is so powerful and it's so valuable. John says experience is not the best teacher. Experience is not the best teacher. Evaluated experience is the best teacher. Number 6, and this is a good one. You're not going to want to miss this one. Partake in the fruit of failure. Partake in the fruit of failure. What is that about? Fruit from failure? A while back, I decided I wanted to get a pickup truck. And I had gotten some good deals by buying cars at an auction, and I thought I'd get a great deal if I worked with a friend to try something new. He'd had success buying cars that had been damaged in collisions, and then they were sold by the insurance companies at the insurance auctions. And he said he'd done this over and over again and had great results, and I'm always ready to get a great value. It seemed like a fine idea to me. Well, how did it turn out? This process took longer, cost more, and never, ever delivered a working vehicle to me. I ended up losing thousands of dollars and wasting 10 months of my life before I finally got rid of that truck. I'll never do that again, right? Well, I'll admit that I'm not super excited about trying that again for my next vehicle purchase, but what did I learn? What was the fruit of that failure? A, I learned a bunch of things I'll do differently the next time I try it. B, I learned that there are different standards of repairs, that my standard of quality tends to be higher than the standard some other people might choose. C, I learned that someone who's well-intentioned and maybe had even been successful doing something, that doesn't guarantee it's going to work every time for me. And D, I learned that I can try something new and it won't kill me, even if I lose some money in the process. Can I apply those lessons for other car purchases? Absolutely. Can I apply those lessons in other areas besides car purchasing? I think I can. Failure is a part of my curiosity journey. Failure is my friend. As long as I'm learning from it, failure is a good thing. Failure is my friend as long as I'm learning from it. Failure is essential to progress. Number 7, stop looking for the one right answer. The fact is, there is more than one way to do it, and different's not necessarily wrong, it's just different. And that's something that's been reinforced for me as I work with teams using the DISC assessments as personality profiles. A D-styled person solves a problem very differently most of the time than an S-styled person would do it. Neither one of them is right or wrong. They're just different. A D-styled person thinks in terms of tasks and how fast they can get the tasks done. An S-styled person thinks in terms of people and process. I love what the author of the book, A Whack on the Side of the Head, said. He said, almost every advance in art, cooking, medicine, agriculture, engineering, marketing, politics, education, and design has occurred when someone challenged the rules and tried another approach. If I'd been successful in business by mailing marketing postcards or using fax machines, they might have been good approaches at the time, but today we probably need a different approach, and that's the kind of thing we're talking about. There's more than one way to do it. Number eight, and I will tell you, number eight's a hard one for me. Get over yourself. If you're going to ask questions and allow yourself to fail because you long for the fruit of failure, you're going to do things that do not work. And when they don't work, you might look foolish. Now, it's hard for me. I was teased a lot as a kid, and I was mocked for my shortcomings. And it imprinted upon me a desire not to be in that situation again, a desire not to fail, because I didn't want to give any help to anyone who might make fun of me. But have you ever watched a baby learning to walk? I've got seven kids. I've watched seven of them figuring this out. They see adults walking, and they pull themselves up on a table or a sofa, and immediately they fall down. If we mocked and belittled them for their failure, they'd probably be stuck in a seated position for the rest of their lives. But have you ever watched a mom try to help encourage her son or daughter to walk? Tremendous encouragement on that journey. The fact is that the only process for learning to walk involves failure, repeated failure, larger and larger failures until we overcome. And that's just the way it is for just about everything. And along the way, fearing what other people think or say is irrelevant to the outcome. I have to remind myself, it's okay to be ignorant. It's okay to have others question my lack of knowledge. At least I'm learning. Number nine, get out of the box. There's so much I should say about this particular one, but I'll leave it at this. Innovation can be amazingly valuable even if other people think you are insane. There was a surgeon back in the 1860s who was shocked by the number of people who died after surgery. And he decided to apply scientific principles to address that problem. Now, unfortunately, at the time, most surgeons were impatient and were ignorant of scientific principles. And then, back in those days, about 50% of patients needing surgery would ultimately die from the surgery. Dr. Lister documented an approach where only one of 11 patients died from infection. It's amazing to me that it was this idea of routine application of science to surgical techniques didn't really start until almost 100 years after Lister. Lister's breakthrough was that he believed in germ theory, and he believed that if he could apply antiseptics to the wound and the environment during surgery, he could reduce the infections that were leading to death. This was far outside the mainstream of thinking. Lister broke the mold by moving outside the normal way things were done. Now, how does this apply to you? You're probably not a doctor and pioneering surgical techniques, right? If you understand the business problems well, you might be able to apply ideas from other disciplines to help you. Maybe you're a software person. You could look at manufacturing for innovation, or vice versa. If you're in retail sales, maybe you could look at service businesses or manufacturing or something else to find a way to apply what they're doing there in your work. Get out of that box, like Dr. Lister. Finally, number 10, enjoy your life. Tom Peters wrote, "The race will go to the curious, the slightly mad, and those with an unsaturated passion for learning and daredevilry." I like that. The race will go to the curious, the slightly mad, and those with an unsaturated passion for learning and daredevilry. When we see life as an experiment and one that we can intentionally enjoy, it changes our perspective. So that's 10 ways to increase your curiosity. So it's almost time for you to be putting together your personal action plan. So you're getting ready for that. Let me share with you a recap of what we talked about tonight. My wife says, bored people are boring. Curiosity leads to significant benefits for you, more opportunities, more rewards, and more fun on your journey. Don't let yourself be bored. Create more curiosity in your life. And John Maxwell listed out for us 10 ways you can increase your curiosity. And as I go over these 10 questions again, I want you to think about how you can use them to increase your curiosity. Which one or two sticks out for you? What's one thing that you can do with that question? For example, what if one of the questions stands out and you put it on a sticky note and put that sticky note on your mirror where you're going to see it every day? What if you asked yourself that one question every day before you started work? You ready for the recap? Here we go. Number one, do you believe you can be curious? Do you believe you can be curious? Number two, do you have a beginner's mindset? Do you have a beginner's mindset? Number three, have you made why your favorite word, like Larry King? Have you made why your favorite word? Why not? Number four, do you spend time with curious people? Do you spend time with curious people? Number five, do you set out to learn something new every day? Do you set out to learn something new every day? Number six, do you partake in the fruit of failure? Do you partake in the fruit of failure? Number seven, have you stopped looking for the right answer? There is more than one way to do it. Have you stopped looking for the right answer? There is more than one way to do it. Number eight, have you gotten over yourself? Have you gotten over yourself? Oh, man, that's a hard one for me. Number nine, do you get out of the box? Do you get out of the box? And number 10, are you enjoying your life? Are you enjoying your life? Are you finding that daredevilry? So for your action plan, which of these 10 things are you going to work on to become more curious? Now, you might be interested in learning more. And I've got a 4-session coaching program on John Maxwell's book called Good Leaders Ask Great Questions. I love this book. It is a great resource on how learning to ask the right questions improves your understanding, improves your performance. I'd love to do that with you or your team. The cost is $249 a person. And in these 4 sessions, you're going to learn some great questions. And you're going to begin to ask better questions that will increase your curiosity. Now, the program includes an electronic study guide. And the interactive coaching sessions are going to allow you to explore the book more deeply than you would on your own. And you're going to leave the sessions with practical ideas that you can immediately put into use. Sound interesting? Drop me an email, tom@brighthillgroup.com. That's tom@brighthillgroup.com, and we will get that set up for you. Thank you for being here for today's Lead Yourself First lesson, and I look forward to hearing from you next time.